and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks. I'm thrilled you are here to join us today. We are going to have a wonderful conversation, as always. You know, I always get excited with our guests. I don't care who the heck they are, where they live. You know, the stories are just amazing. And today we're going to be talking about dementia from a daughter's perspective. But before I introduce you to our guest, I'm going to do a couple of quick shout outs because there's lots going on. So one is for Mauds Awards. If you are providing any services for dementia, you can go to maudsawards.org. They are having their awards open until, I think it's May 13th. Yeah. And for organizations, you could win up to $25,000, and for individuals, up to $5,000. And that isn't for what you're going to do. That is for what you've already done. So check them out. And Lorenzo's House is having their Youth Summit June 14th and 15th. And you can go to lorenzoshouse.org. It's absolutely fabulous, and it's a lot of fun. So go check them out. And then I always want to tell people about Twiddle too. Twiddle has some great sundowning products that you can purchase that bring that calmness back and get rid of kind of that antsiness. They also have a product called Adapt-A-Wrap that is really helpful for those people who, you know, really struggle with you getting them dressed, and you don't have to do stuff over the head. You can go to four twiddles.com. Again, that's the number four and then twiddlesplural.com for information there. And of course, if you're interested in some support groups, just reach out to me. Information will be in the program notes for that. So let's go ahead and introduce you to our guest today. So let me go get her. Nicole, I'm really excited to have you on today. You've written the book, which you've got behind you there, Diagnosis Dementia. And I can't wait to hear your story and be able to share that with our audience. But first, do you mind introducing yourself to our audience, please?
Sure. My name is Nicole Smith, and I found myself sandwiched in between aging parents and children. I grew up in Iowa, so I'm a Midwesterner, and then moved around the country and ended up in the last year in Arizona. So this is my ninth state of residence. So we're enjoying Arizona so far. And I've got, like I said, I've got three parents and five children scattered around the country that I'm responsible for. So I've jumped right headlong into the caregiver. I studied at the University of Texas, got a business degree, and then moved around with my job, and then got married and moved around with my husband's job. And then, like I said, ended up here in Arizona for retirement.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I always ask everybody if they've been personally touched by dementia. And of course, you've written the book and have been, but you want to give us a little snippet of that?
Sure. So I was blindsided by the whole dementia thing. I didn't know anything about dementia. The only thing I knew was that Ronald Reagan had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's in his 80s, and he was old. And that's the only mention of Alzheimer's I'd ever known about. And then my aunt, who is my mother's older sister and has been a nurse for 50 years, she kind of started realizing some things were off with my mother, and started scheduling some appointments. And then we kind of began the tag team effort to figure out what was going on. And my mom had her first neurologist appointment in March of 2020. I had flown from New Jersey to LA to accompany her to that appointment. And I didn't really know what was coming down the road. It was just an initial appointment with the neurologist, and then we went into lockdown. I wasn't even sure I was going to make it back to New Jersey to my family, but I did. But my mom didn't want to come with me. She loved LA, and we didn't really know what would happen. And of course, 2 years of isolation accelerated the decline into dementia for my mother, and then everything just got worse from there.
Yeah, whoever would have thought it would have been a couple of years, you know, it was like, oh, it'll be gone in a month. And then it was 2 months and 3 months and then, 6 months. And oh my gosh, it's been a year. And we kept rolling with it. And yeah, it impacted so many people, not just people living with dementia, but all of us as well. You know,
Oh,
life
yeah.
has totally changed. When you first went to that appointment and got the diagnosis, what were your thoughts and what were your mom's thoughts at that time?
Well, this initial appointment was not an official diagnosis. It was the first neurology appointment, so it was more of a baseline.
Okay.
And at that time, my mom was hiding a lot of things, and we didn't really realize it. And looking back on it, even a couple years prior, there were things that she had done. We're like, oh, that's weird. But it's just like, you just say, oh, that's weird. And you move on because, again, we had just no idea what was percolating in her brain. So I just, like I said, I just follow orders from my aunt. Please fly out there, go to this appointment with your mom. And then the funny thing was, is I wasn't there 5 minutes. And then my mom got agitated with me, and the doctor sent me out of the room. So I flew all that way to be there for 5 minutes. And then, because my aunt had emphasized how important it was to have a family member there. But then what happened was they were able to call my aunt on the phone and get her on the phone. And so she was the family member in present in the meeting, and I was just stewing in the waiting room. So, and then we went to leave that appointment, and mom, couldn't find the car. And then we went to Starbucks, but she was confused about where we were. It was a Starbucks near her house that she'd always gone to. So just right then, even though we didn't have an official diagnosis, it started to sink in a little bit with me. But I think I was still in the point of that's weird, kind of thing. And then, like I said, a year and a half or so later, when we got the official diagnosis, then everything just went haywire.
Yeah, well, and when there's agitation, that increases the symptoms and stuff too. So you're both agitated
Yeah.
during that time, and your aunt's probably trying to calm things down. And it's weird because you don't know what to expect out of these changes, and nobody really wants to go there. So, there's I for me, I know there was kind of a denial. With it, even though we saw it coming, it's like, well, it can't be that bad. No, you just don't want to believe it.
Well, and I wasn't in denial. I was clueless. And so I wasn't like I was in denial, and I didn't think it was a bad thing, or I wasn't worried about it because I didn't know much about it, and I didn't know how important behavior is. So in my book, I write about mom mantras. So she had her reality was different, and she'd always been a logical person. She'd run a couple businesses, and so she had this picture of where her finances were and what things were happening. And I said, no, that's not true. But she was adamant about, and so I didn't understand that their reality was different from our reality, and then paranoia and all that was part of the disease. At that time, I didn't know. I just knew that mom didn't understand or what was going on. But, and then as I started listening to podcasts and reading books and understanding more about how the disease, even everybody's different, but some more common things in the disease and throughout the disease, then I was like, oh, well, there's no reason for me to argue with her because we're in two different realities. So once I started learning about the behavioral modifications that I could make and the understanding that I developed, then things got a whole lot better. And once we got the meds figured out, that helped too. So.
Well, there are probably some people too out there that are wondering, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? How do you define that? Because people say it in so many different fashions.
Yeah, the way I define it is dementia is the umbrella term for any kind of cognitive decline. And then Alzheimer's disease is one of those diseases under the dementia umbrella. And it is the most common that affects probably maybe 65% of those with dementia. But then my stepmother was diagnosed with frontal temporal dementia or aphasia, which Bruce Willis and Wendy Williams have. And then there's Lewy body, there's Parkinson's, there's Huntington's disease, there's vascular dementia, garden variety dementia. There's like 100 different types. So, but Alzheimer's is by far the most prevalent, and it typically affects short-term memory first, but every brain is different, every person is different, every disease is different. So
And that's so important to point that out, because I hear all the time in support groups, well, my husband doesn't act like that, or you can't have that because you shouldn't be able to do this. And they'll go, well, some days I can and some days I can't. It just depends. It isn't a flat line.
right. And I tell people the way that typically, and I'm not a physician or anything, but typically the way it's diagnosed is kind of where it affects the brain. Like, so with aphasia, it affects your ability to communicate, to speak and have other people understand what you're trying to communicate and write and read. Whereas, like I said, Alzheimer's typically will affect short-term memory first. And then there's some people where it affects executive function, mood, and the filters that we have, so behavior changes. And then one of my friends said, well, she said, I wasn't prepared for my mother to physically decline. And I said, well, it's a progressive degenerative disease. So it starts in the mind, and the mind controls everything. So eventually all the systems that control your physical movements eventually affect all of that too, incontinence and all that fun stuff. So
Mobility, yep, it doesn't end, and you never know. And I know I've had people say they've gotten the 36-hour day, and it scared them because there's so much in there, and it's a guide, it's a resource. It's not everything in this book is going to happen to you or your loved one. It's just in case it does, or if you're seeing signals of this or that. There's a lot of confusion out there, and I would just add too that dementia isn't actually a disease. It's a category, like cancer is a
right,
category.
a category, yeah.
And then there's all different types with that. And some people, hit the jackpot and they get, multiple types of dementia, or mixed dementia. They call it different names, and some of them add on, and so it's not always going to be clear out there, because people use different verbiage sometimes in terms of how they explain things. I want to talk about your book, but first I want to talk about I'm always intrigued with the cover art and how you picked that.
Yeah, well, just like when I put together my dementia team, my aunt's a nurse, my husband's a CPA, I have a friend who's a financial advisor, and I pulled together the people that I know and trust to help care for my mother. And my niece is a graphic designer. She runs a boutique branding firm in Missouri, and so I asked her to come up with some kind of graphic for the cover, and that's what we got, and I love it.
Yeah, because it looks confusing,
It
which this really is, and yet I like the different colors.
and even the font, like the font was selective, so stuff like that. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about, why you decided to write the book. Most people don't understand how much time it takes to put a book together. I mean, I wrote a 28-page children's book, and it took me years to do, and I ended up pulling in a co-author to prod me through it because of the time with it. So what I found, because I've talked with many authors, is there's usually something that just hits them that says, nope, this is what you have to do with the information that you've gained.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now, 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Yeah, well, for me, when I was in New Jersey, I spent over a decade as a volunteer for Room to Read, which is a global literacy global literacy organization. And I loved the volunteer work, and it actually made me read more. It made me more aware about global issues and children's books. And I kind of so from that, I started a podcast about volunteering. For 5 years, I did a podcast about everything volunteering, whether it was executive directors or philanthropists or fundraisers or authors. So I would interview different people every week. And then I decided to just start taking some writing classes. So I took one in New York City, the Gotham Writers Workshop, and other ones in New Jersey. And I was in these writing classes. So because I thought I was going to write a book about volunteering, like, you know, volunteering, I feel like it's so important, but some people just feel like it's kind of boring. But it's my whole family's always volunteered, and it's very ingrained into our whole family fabric. And then everything happened with my mom, and I was writing and writing and writing as I processed what was going on. So I was flying back and forth between New York or New Jersey and LA every month. And so I had, you know, 12 hours worth of flight time to kind of process. And then when she went into the psych ward, I in the hospital and different things, and I couldn't see her, and I was riddled with this guilt and confusion. And so I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And then at some point I did know about the 36-hour day, and other friends had given me books, and I started to learn things, but 36-hour day is like a Bible, and it is so thick and so comprehensive, and it's written by a physician, and it's very, very well done. But I wanted something that just told me what do you need to do now? What do you need to do now? What do you need to do now? And like a checklist kind of thing. And what are the websites and what are the resources kind of, because I talk about this process as when you become a caregiver, it's like learning three foreign languages simultaneously under duress with life or death consequences. So I had to learn the financial, I had to learn the legal, I had to learn the medical, I had to learn the emotional, I was fighting with my sister. So all this was going on, and I just started looking things up and studying things. And then I just started funneling it all into a Word document. And somewhere along the way, I thought, well, maybe this could help people. So maybe I'll package it up in a book and get it out.
What great use of your time with that. I know I found too that a lot of the books, you know, when I entered, my mom lived with the disease for 30 years. She's been gone for 10 now. So that there wasn't much out there versus medical model. And it's like, I don't necessarily want statistics and definitions. I want to know how to live with this disease, and how do I care well for this process, and how do I still care for my family and my friends and myself in this. And it's nice to see there's more and more books coming about and people sharing their stories, which I think is really important. Now, your subtitle of your book, if I'm not mistaken, is Your Guide for Elder Planning and Crisis Management. And I love that last piece of crisis management, because anyone who has cared for someone with dementia has felt that at some point in time. And some people feel it the whole time, you know, depending on how they're doing with things and what their situation is. What can people expect to find in your book?
Yeah, so the entree was the dementia and my mom, but then as my mom, we were doing all this with my mom, then my stepmother was diagnosed with primary progressive aphasia, which was a whole different set of challenges. And then my dad underwent surgery for normal pressure hydrocephalus. So we had brain surgery and multiple things all going on simultaneously in multiple states. And I was trying to figure everything out. And then we didn't know where my mom was going to end up. So I'm talking to lawyers in New Jersey. I'm talking to elder law attorneys in California. I'm talking to him in Maryland. And then I realized my dad didn't have his will done or anything. And then I freaked out. So it was part of my learning process and expanded into, why should you have your will done? Why should you have your medical power of attorney and your financial power of attorney and your payable on death and your checking accounts having? So it launched into all. So I dug deeper into the finance, the legal and the medical and the emotional with everything that I was dealing with. And so it talks about our story and my story, but my story is the background for, why do I need to get these things done? What can go wrong? Why do I need to stop my mom from driving because she could kill someone? You know, like, so, you know, if you, it, it, because everyone has these long checklists, like you need to do this, you need to do that. Well, yeah, I know I need to do it, but you need a compelling reason to do it. And everything that I went through should get you motivated to do it. Again, every family is different, but my elder law attorney in California, he said, same play, different actors. He's heard this story before. And so I figured many people could relate.
Well, and, you know, most people have a meltdown dealing with one, you know, a parent. And here you're dealing with three in different states on top of it with different types. It's like, oh, my gosh, talk about education by fire, you know, that you went through. Now, as far as family dynamics, do you mind sharing? You know, you had mentioned a sister, but did you have other siblings? I know your aunt was helpful with your mom, but did you have people in these other states to help with this process?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna cry. Like I wrote, I've written articles and stuff. So, but thank God I had my aunt. So I feel like anybody who's a caregiver, you need a solid. I mean, I have a team, but I also had my solid bosom buddy, my core communicator connector was my Aunt Nancy. So she obviously cared for my mother a great deal. She knows medical terminology forward and backward. And we became a team to figure all this out. So I was flying back and forth from New Jersey. My sister lived 10 minutes from my mother, but checked out, like, you know, couldn't be of help at the time, whatever. And then my brother had checked out 20 years ago. He and my mom did not have a good relationship, which was fine. And then I have five stepsisters from my mom's marriage to my stepdad, and they're all older. But the oldest stepsister in that family, she helped me a lot. So she was but she had, you know, everyone has their own lives going on. So, but she flew and helped me empty out mom's house. So I had, you know, I had teams of or pieces of people, which was great. But my aunt, having my aunt there to talk to and be with, you know, every day of the week if I needed was critical. Like I would have died because they say 30% of caregivers die before the person they're caring for, and I was definitely on would have been on that path.
Yeah,
so the stress is just overwhelming.
Yeah, well, and then with, you know, so that was for your mom. What about your dad? And I would imagine siblings were probably playing the same roles for your dad.
Yeah, well, they were non-existent. Yeah, so there was no stepchildren on my dad's side. My stepmom never had any other children, but her brother lived close by and I knew them. And so I reached out to them and I reached out to my dad and I said, I'm flying in, I'm booking an appointment with attorney. You can come with me whether you want to or not, but Iowa law is different and I got to figure it out. So between her, my stepmom's family and my dad and different things, it was a process though. It was a slow process. I had to introduce the idea. I had to go back. I had to talk to them. And you know, I just said, I can't do all this. And so you need to work with me. And he was resistant at first, but he agreed and came around. And part of it's just an education again is overwhelming. And a lot of people don't trust lawyers and don't trust doctors and don't trust, you know, so it's building that trust and building the education and working together. So I was, you know, that was an easier part of it because everyone was logical, but it still was overwhelming. And it took 18 months to get that done.
Well, and I appreciate that you talked about, you know, the pace of which this stuff can get done, because it isn't just, you know, it's not this logical step. Okay, we need this done. We're going to do it. That's not typically the way it works in most families. And there is a lot of massaging and educating and, you know, some people are in the family are never going to agree with what you're doing. And that makes it difficult, you know, to maneuver, and you can have people undoing the education that you're doing and telling different stories or going underground trying to do stuff too. I mean, families are extremely interesting in how they handle this and the family dynamics and being able to let go graciously and let your siblings or whoever family members be themselves. And if that means they're not part of it, I know I had a really hard time because I'm like, no, they're going to regret this. They're good. They're going to want to be part of this, you know, and I remember the day I finally said, this isn't my responsibility to pull them in. This is their life choice, not mine. And Boy, I could feel the burden just lift off my shoulders because I had two brothers that weren't very active either, and sometimes would come in and muddle things up a tad, and then I'd have to, oh, now I got to redo this all over again. You got to be kidding me. It's a lot of wear and tear, and it's quite the dance to learn for sure.
Yeah, and fortunately, I didn't have anyone muddling things, but it was just me kind of doing everything. But I'm not afraid to ask questions. I'm not afraid to delegate. I'm not afraid to get help. I just had to pull it from other sources, and that worked out. But it was figuring out. But I understand, like, everyone has their own journey. Everyone has their own issues at work, with family, their kids. It's all. It's everyone has their own way of dealing with emotion and stress and illness, and so I don't discount that at all. But and I'm fortunate that my husband was close to retirement. He had extra time to take care of our kids while I was flying across the country, and we have the resources. And I don't work outside of volunteering, so I have the time to figure all this out. So that's why I decided to make it worth my while and write a book.
Well, and make it worth other people's while as well, because it is, people are looking for resources from people who have actually, walked the path. There's a huge, huge difference there. I want to continue this conversation, but for right now, we're going to take just a quick break, and then we will return and talk with Nicole. But in the meantime, check out her website. It is njsmithbooksplural.com. And she is on LinkedIn and Instagram as UT Nicole Smith. You can find her there. But we're going to hear about QBlocks, which is a fantastic webmaster, and we'll be right back. I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. They have been in business for 18 years and they serve the globe. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences. I don't know about you with tech companies. They have made a very complicated process very easy, and their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. You can get a 10% discount. Visit them at QBlocks, that's QBlocks.com. Or you can email them at letstalk@qblocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, Lori, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days. Well, I always find the family dynamic so interesting that we've been talking about. Now, you've talked about kind of the legal and I would imagine healthcare declarations and all of that kind of fun stuff. What other types of things did you, besides going to the medical appointments and figuring out medications, and what other things did you really have to monitor, or was it just all of life?
Well, right now I'm still going through Medicare because we moved my mom from, she was in memory care in 2 years for 2 years in Maryland near my aunt, long story, and now she's here in Arizona near me. But because she changed, right, she had to open enrollment for Medicare and trying to figure all that out. And it's a Medicare, my figure out my next book's going to be, Medicare Madness and how not to go insane and die or whatever. I don't know, but. But working title is Medicare Madness because there's so many brokers and there's so many options. And then I've already, so I talked with the broker. I went to the library and took the 3 hour class about Medicare. I had a private meeting with the Medicare person at the Area Agency on Aging. And then I selected a plan. And then the next day I get an email saying, you've elected for prescription drug coverage and you've never had it before. Therefore, you'll be assessed a $150 penalty plus a higher premium for the rest of your natural life. Thank you very much. I'm like, okay. So So that was the ding I got immediately because my broker ill advised me, and we didn't know what my mom had done because we were still trying to do the gymnastics between her old email and her social security account and her payments and her Medicare. I mean, I had her Medicare card, but that didn't tell me what elections she had made in the past as far as supplemental insurance, advantage plans, whatever. So I'm definitely still in the throes of that giant Medicare nightmare.
Well, I'm just in the process of applying for it myself. And I was told, and I found this really interesting, I'm working through a broker, that she highly recommended that I take, and I heard this on a webinar I went to sign up for the government one, which is higher than the Advantage plans and stuff.
You mean like a supplemental or a Medigap?
Yep.
Yeah.
And to do that, because she says, if you are doing the Advantage plans and you decide you want to go back to the government one, if you have dementia, they probably are going to reject you at that point.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, so that was the other thing. I moved to Arizona and they're like, well, because your mom has dementia, she cannot have a supplemental plan. She, you know, and the other, and I asked people in the industry, they're like, well, I don't know. Like literally nobody knows anything. So I'm just saying that. So I'm learning and then it changes, but you have to figure out what's important to you. So my number one criteria when we moved here is there's a nurse practitioner that works with the memory care where my mom resides. And that was my number one goal, was to make sure that whatever plan I got, that he was listed as the primary care physician. To me, that's all that mattered. And I was going for catastrophic coverage. That was important. And I don't have any doctors in Arizona. So I didn't need to keep my doctor or figure that out, because I'm building her doctors right now. So it just depends on, and there's certain qualifications or filters. So if you're if you travel and you're traveling all over the country, seeing your grandkids and visiting relatives, you maybe want a different plan than if you're, you know, holed up in your little community and you stay there most of the time, because there's different implications about who you can see, who's in network, what's covered. And my head is still spinning from this whole drug plan election thing. So, and my mom's only on a few meds, but I don't know what happens if she has a stroke and needs different meds, right? You know,
it's a crapshoot. No matter how much knowledge you have, it's not enough for what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right. And the best one was when I'm calling around to make her other appointments, like for dermatology, podiatry, eyes, and, you know, just the basics. I'm pulling up the plan and the doctor's in the plan. So I call to confirm. And even though they're on the plan, they just say, well, bring her in and we'll see her. And then we have to bill it to see if it'll be covered. You'll find out afterwards.
Which makes no sense. It's like, you should know that.
And they don't. So I'm just saying, good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will say, when we took her, so my mom went from, it's a long story, but I took her to the ER because we were at our wit's end. She was there for a week. Then she was in behavioral health, psychotic area for 3 weeks, and we did not get a single, she was on plain Medicare, nothing else, and we did not get a single bill, not a single bill. And so evidently she did something right back then, but then the drug thing's different, and then there's all these parameters that you have a window to sign up, and if you don't, you're barred for life and things like that.
It's complicated, that's for sure. And it seems like you said, everyone you talk to has a little different spin on it, which does not help.
Right. There are the libraries, and there's I just ordered Medicare for Dummies, the book, and there's our people that can help. But the best advice I would give is, so when I went to the Area Agency on Aging I booked a private appointment with the woman, and it was just last month, which was okay, because as you get closer to open enrollment at the end of the year, they're swamped. So if you can, go now. And like I said, I learned little bits over the last 2 years. I've learned little snippets, and I slowly absorb different parts of it. But it is a monster.
Well, what advice would you give to others who are a sandwich generation like yourself? You've got, you know, you're married, you've got kids, you've got parents all over the country. You know, that's a lot.
I would say literally just get organized and do the most important things first. So primary, I would say, get your medical power of attorney done and your healthcare power of attorney done. I mean, sorry, financial and medical. So those are different documents, a power of attorney for finance and a power of attorney for medical. And those are most important. And I would say you have to do them, make sure your parents have them done, make sure you have them done for yourself. And if your children are over 18, they need to have those done as well. Because even though you're their parent, if something happens to them when they're 20, you have no say whatsoever. So your parents, yourself, and your children, get those done. Hire an attorney. We were on a call the other day with an elder care attorney, and a lot of people don't want to pay the expense and they just want to do legal Zoom or whatever, but that's just a form and you don't know, you're just answering questions and checking boxes and you don't know the implications of that. And every state is different. Every county is different. All the rules are different. And then I was at another seminar recently, and now Arizona has what they call a mental health power of attorney, which I don't even really know what that means yet, but it's so different. And then I learned from dealing with West Coast and East Coast, the terminology changes. So in California, it's called conservatorship. In New Jersey, it's called guardianship. And then you've got one for the finances and you've got one for the person. So it's very, very complicated. You've got to leave it to the professionals. But I would say, you know, powers of attorney are the two critical documents to get done for everyone. And then you can move on to estate planning and financial planning and medical planning. And there's a lot. It's a lot. So it's all in my book, broken down.
I'm glad that you prioritize the power of attorneys first, you know, because it is a lot. And I'm thrilled that you mentioned, don't just do it for the one you're caring for. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. Because I've had a lot of friends who have had their kids be in an accident and they end up in the hospital and the doctors won't tell them anything. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm paying for their insurance. And they're like, it doesn't make any difference. You know, we have to have approval. And so then they can't make medical decisions. And this person's laying in critical condition. It's horrible. It's horrible for everyone. So it's just something that we have to, as a society, get much more comfortable with. It's just smart living. And the powers of attorney, you know, aren't that expensive to do. And
well, and the argument to make is, if you don't have them, you're going to spend loads and loads of money fixing it on the back end. If you, yeah. It's just a few $100s. It just depends, but it's well worth it. It's insurance, basically. Yeah.
Well, and now they have the whole social media piece too, that you know, who can be in charge of your social media is, and I'm like, why don't they just add it to the power of attorney to just be another check? You know, why can't they just make it simple?
Yeah, well, there's two schools of thought on that. So I was at a seminar in New Jersey last week and with an elder law attorney, and I asked him about the mental health that he'd never heard of. And he said, it depends on the attorney, because sometimes they break them down into this power of attorney is for checking and this power of attorney is for real estate and this power of attorney is for business deals. But he said he, as a professional, kind in every situation is different, but he likes to keep it pretty simple where you have one for medical and one for financial. And he said those other ones, it depends on what you're trying to do and the state. So that's why it's important to have an attorney who understands all these terms and how things work in court and how to avoid court, because otherwise you're going to spend a lot of money.
Ching-a-ling. And then, you know, you'll run into the VA or Social Security or, you know, different entities that want a different power of attorney too. And so when you're dealing with somebody with dementia, they might have signed the power of attorney originally and you're all set up and ready to go. And now they can't, you know, they've declined.
Yeah, well, that's another thing I wasn't sure of. It's a gray area. So there's, again, if you work with an attorney, because I thought, oh, because that's what happened when my stepmom started developing aphasia. I was like, we have to get this done stat, because I don't know if there's a gray area or if the diagnosis means you can't sign anything. But I learned that there's a lot of gray area there, but there are ways you can do power of attorney, even if someone has a diagnosis of dementia, because there's graduating degrees of dementia. And again, the attorneys know how to handle that and to make sure that nobody's getting fleeced and everyone's on the same page and protections are written into how they design those.
Well, and I think too, people don't realize it's a protection for themselves to have an attorney involved, you know, and it's like, well, I got, you know, a legal guidance here, you know, on this wasn't just.
And that protects you. Yes. Yeah. So if people start coming after you, you can just say, call my lawyer.
How is your mom doing at this point?
So we moved her from Maryland memory care to memory care near me here in Arizona. We found a lovely place. I toured 15 different places and I knew exactly what I was looking for because I've been, down this road before. And what was important to me that I chose a place. It's a very high-end place. Luckily, we can afford that. She can afford that. It's 30 minutes from my house. And I'm over there about four times a week. And I chose to have her farther away instead of down the street because I wanted to plan my visits. And I didn't want to feel like I had to run over there every time I had like 20 minutes to spare and spend time. So I spend quality time with her. We go to the library, we go to Whole Foods, we hang out and have a snack, and we have a lovely time together. It's in a lovely area. The people are lovely, the staff is lovely, the residents are lovely, and and so she's doing all right. She has her days. She did have a fall, but fortunately she didn't break anything. But that was good because I got to see the team like jump into action when she fell to figure out what to do next. And so that was terrifying and comforting then that we had a kind of a practice run. But the other thing we talk about, is that if you don't know when something's going to happen, I mean, that's the hard part, is you've got this underlying just blanket of stress all the time. Is like, is somebody going to fall? Are they going to, my dad falls literally all the time, but he's like, I know how to fall, but what if he falls on an anvil or something, So it's this underlying current of stress that we constantly have to manage. And we talk a lot about that in the daughterhood organization that I'm part of, which is daughterhood.org, that offers support groups all month long for caregivers.
Which is wonderful. They do a great job. And being part of a support group is, I think, critical. And I know for myself, I pushed it aside for years thinking, I don't have time for a support group. I mean, I can barely manage what I've got going on. And I always looked at it as it was one more thing I was doing for my mom, and I couldn't prioritize it. And then and my audience has probably heard this from me before, but I went to a support group to listen to a friend speak, and he didn't show up. He got sick. So I was like trapped there. And that's how I felt. I felt trapped. I don't want to be here. I was here to hear him speak.
Oh.
And I immediately saw the value in the support group. And I'm like, oh my gosh, why have I been pushing this away? But I think there was kind of a stigma with it too. And then it was that prioritizing, not really knowing what I was going to benefit from it. It was kind of getting back to your whys. Why do I need this? Why is this going to, how is this going to help me?
Yeah, and I've been on, I mean, I'm on a lot of them. I run some of them. I'm on a lot of them, but and overwhelmingly people come on and you're right. It's like it's one more thing I gotta do and I don't wanna, but you don't have to turn your mic on, you don't have to turn your camera on, you can just listen. I say you can cry, you can vent, you can share. But the cool thing that happens is that inevitably the caregivers start helping one another. It's like, oh, I had this, and then they feel empowered. Because even, again, like with my book, it's like I've been through this and now I can turn this horrible journey into something that's going to benefit somebody else. So they don't have to experience it in the way I did, and they can jump a couple head spots ahead and skip the agony of it. Because it's like, oh, try this, try this. And literally everybody on the call always says, I'm tired, I didn't want to come on, but this has helped me so much. I'm so glad I'm here. I'm invigorated. I'm coming again. And oh my gosh, it really is amazing.
Yeah, they say it's their lifeline, and they don't know
Yes.
once they get into it, they don't know how they did things without it before. It
And have
was
you seen Wine Women and Dementia? Do you know that whole
yeah,
thing?
yep.
Oh my gosh, see Wine, and she's gonna play it for free for Mother's Day. It's if you sign up this Friday, this registration is opening, and you're gonna be able to sign up to watch it virtually for free. And I held a screening here in Arizona, and there's been lots of screenings. Oh my gosh, it is just, I could watch it 10 times.
It shows all sides. It shows the joy. It shows the frustration. It shows the sadness, but it shows, most importantly, the camaraderie of the similarities of the journeys, even though they're very, very different. At our core, we're really all the same, and we're all trying to figure this out together. And it's an easy thing to watch. you know, just because of the personalities and the style of the way it was put together.
And Kitty's so fun. She's just so fun.
I can just see her, you know, the two of them, you know, driving that motorhome, you know, around the country, you know, to gather stories and just like, let's go, let's just do this, you know, and pretty cool. So I shouldn't say I wasn't aware. I forgot that they were going to do that that screening for free on Mother's Day.
It's right around Mother's Day or something. But the feedback I got, we showed it. They said, you know, we laughed and we cried, but we laughed more than we cried. Mm-hmm. And then Anne Tomlinson, who's the founder of Daughterhood, she said, there's 50 million of us caregivers out there, and we all feel like we're alone, but there's 50 million of us. So yeah, we need to connect over support groups and movies and wine.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Well, and the title just pulls you in too, you know, because it's, how do you cope?
For me, it's beer instead of wine, but beer and chocolate, that's all right.
Yeah, whatever works, that's for sure. So how is your dad doing at this point?
He's doing well. I advocate for the normal pressure hydrocephalus surgery. He had the surgery. It's like they put a valve in there to drain the brain, the fluid into your stomach. Like I was shocked because it's an overnight surgery and then you're sent home. And I mean, he has benefited tremendously because his was all mobility mm-hmm. issues and he got all of that back. And, you know, so that's been wonderful for him. And so he's doing great. My stepmom, unfortunately, continues to decline because aphasia is another progressive degenerative disease. But I'm in touch with them all the time. I'm still going to Iowa. It's frustrating. But so far they manage together and he does his stuff and she's in three different choirs because you can't emphasize music enough. And she's always been in choirs and they have a special dementia choir in their town. And so the music, any which way you can do the music, do the music.
That's wonderful. And people don't understand the power of the music, but I think you just have to reflect within of how music impacts you on a daily basis, you know, and how a song can lift you up or make you cry or, you know, bring you back, you know, a zillion years to high school or whatever, really tied in. And that still is in effect with people with dementia. That's an important thing. Yeah. I would love to see us in the U.S. finally do social prescriptions for music and other forms of art and so many different things, support groups and everything. I think that would take the burden off the family and really give them support and hope and make them stronger, you know, on this journey.
I have a funny story. So we grew up listening to Neil Diamond. My mother loved Neil Diamond, right? And we did too. And like 2 years ago, maybe the Neil Diamond musical debuted on Broadway called Beautiful Noise. Mm-hmm. So I went with my friends and just, oh, I'm going to cry again, the music and everything. I was bawling my brains out for that entire show and I loved it. And then, so we moved my mom in January and we're kind of looking at the activities calendar and we look up and like literally 3 days after she moved in, they had a Neil Diamond coming to sing, like a Neil Diamond, you know, cover dude. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so he came on Friday night during the dinner hour and we were like, everyone saw we were strange, but we're like singing and jumping out of our seats and my mom just had the best time. And so we took it as a sign that we had chosen the right place. And you know, I still will play Neil Diamond for her and she just perks right up and sings along. And it's, yeah, so it's very, 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 and I think he has Parkinson's himself. Neil Diamond does. So he doesn't perform anymore, but.
Wow. How fun is that? That is really cool. Is there anything in the book that stands out to you that is maybe like your favorite section that you think don't miss this chapter?
For me, the poignant piece in there that kind of was the crux of writing the book is when my mom wandered out into the middle of the night and we couldn't find her despite all the things that we had put in place to try and find her. She turned off her phone. So just that was like the pivotal moment where something's got to give. Like we had been slowly kind of working with her and trying to figure it out. And then literally everything changed on a dime when she disappeared in the middle of the night and got three guys from a bar to take her out. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. So that was the pivotal moment. But I would say pay attention. That's the thing. You've got to pay attention to those little things where you go, that was weird. That was weird. And then the other advice that I got from the seminar I was at last week, and she said, if you're thinking it might be time to move mom or dad, it's probably past time to move mom or dad. And everyone always has the excuse, well, I promised I wouldn't put her in a home, but I never made that promise. So I have no guilt about that. But it's not a convalescent, dingy institutional home anymore. That's like living in a cruise ship and there's so many options. Like if you don't have the resources, you don't have to move into the Taj Mahal, but there's co-housing and there's senior communities and there's collaborative communities. It takes some effort. You can build an accessory dwelling unit in your backyard. So there's so many options today. I say we're in the wild, wild west of aging options, but you do have to do your homework. You find out what's best for you, what you can afford, and figure out a plan, because if you fail to plan, you know what happens.
That is so true. And I'm trying to think of the company I interviewed. I want to say it was something like Pods on Wheels or something. And they had these little mini homes that they could just roll right into your yard. And they had their own bathrooms, you know.
Yeah, the tiny houses, right? Yeah. Tiny housing and all that. Yeah. I mean, and the ADUs, the accessory dwelling units, there's so many kits out there. They have architectural competitions to see who can build the best one. And there was a cool one out of Minnesota, I forget. But you know, and they're beautiful.
There are more and more options, and more people are, you know, stating that they want to stay home versus going into a community ever since COVID. And, you know, and plus the prices have just gone up so much that it's for some people, it's just prohibitive too. So I agree with you, get educated before you need it. And if you have to tell yourself, I don't need it, but you know, maybe a friend does down the road, you know, use that mind frame if that's what you have to do. But it will make your life easier, because if you hit that crisis mode and then have to do your research, you know, first you're going to be starting with a muddled brain that's in overload. So you're not going to take in all the information that you probably would when you're more relaxed.
So. Right. And they say, so typically if you're getting married, you spend like 18 months planning your wedding, right? And if you're having a baby, you have 9 months to get ready for that baby. And then I think on average, to get ready to be a caregiver, you have 9 minutes after that phone call. Like yeah. 9 minutes.
That sounds about right. So yeah, it's important to get educated. Don't put your head in the sand, because there's many more options than what people believe there are. And the more we have these types of conversations to connect people to resources, products, and tools, the better off we are.
Have you heard of Silver Nest? So Silver Nest is a matching company that matches people that have their homes and want to stay in their homes. And then they invite a younger generation person, maybe a graduate student or someone, to live with them. And the agreements are made about what that person's going to do. But then you have the socialization, which is so key. And it helps with the finances, and you're giving a young person who may be paying off student loans and everything an option to live in a home with your loved one. And I don't know how the legalities work, but that's another very cool service that I learned about.
Oh, I've not heard of them. I'll have to check them out, because that would be wonderful to have them on the show too. The more things that we can spread, and you know, it's important to have choice. You know, there's nothing worse than you only have one option and you're not feeling like that's a good one. At least if you've got three or four things before you, you know, you can still pick the best of them and be involved in that process, which I think is critical. Or even just getting out there and touring places. A lot of people go, I don't need it now, but get out there ahead of time. It'll be well worth the time spent.
Yeah. Or you could just go look at the different. So that's why my book is full of all these websites. So there's movies, there's books, there's podcasts, there's websites, there's from everything that you have to do, from, like I said, the legal and the medical and the financial perspective to the, what you kind of want to think about as far as lodging and all that other stuff, setting up activities, TIPA Snow, behavioral resources, the Dawn method. It covers it. I mean, it's a little thin book, mm-hmm. but you know, you can stick it in your purse. So when you're in the doctor's office and you're waiting, just read a chapter or something.
Well, I have to throw a plug in for Alzheimer's Speaks too. If you go to our site, we have a ton of free educational resources that covers a lot of stuff, and you can pick through it as you want to on that. So, Nicole, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time today. Again, you can reach out to Nicole by going to the website, which is njsmithbooksplural.com. She is on LinkedIn and Instagram under UT Nicole Smith. And, you know, pick up the book. I mean, my goodness. And where can they get that? Do they go to your website? Do they go to?
Yeah, they can go to my website. And my Instagram is Dementia Book Review. So I started the Instagram to review all the books I was reading about dementia. So you can see all the books I've read with a little blurb in them under Dementia Book Review on Instagram. And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm in a bunch of different Facebook groups, kind of throwing my comments out there here and there whenever I feel like I have 2 cents to contribute. But I'm part of daughterhood.org. Yeah, so I'm just kind of making the rounds.
Oh, okay. I'll have to send you my book to review.
Do that.
Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care. It's a children's book. It's just a short, sweet, and, you know, just gets people thinking about how they care for others, how they care for themselves. And
no, I would love that, because I haven't done any children's books yet. So that's perfect.
Okay. I will definitely get that to you. In wrapping up again, Nicole, thank you so much for your time and sharing your personal story and your expertise. You know, the struggles of this journey and being able to share it with others gives so many people comfort and guidance. It's incredible. So thanks for being courageous and you know, taking the time to write the book. And for our viewers, you know, I hope you decide to join us and be a giver of hope. Like, click and share this information, because you don't know who in your sphere needs it. And we need to make sure that people know where they can access information. We need to make it a more comfortable conversation, so that they can reach out and grab it when they need it. So thank you, everyone. Appreciate you so much. And we'll see you next time. Bye now.
Thank you.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey, everybody. Jared Sylvester here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.